A century ago, Ireland was going through an accelerated political evolution. And one of the best ways to analyse the changes during these revolutionary years is by looking at what was going on, not just at the polling stations, but in the thick of hard-fought election campaigns. A new book called Electioneering and Propaganda in Ireland, 1917 to 1921, Votes, Violence and Victory, analyses the political rivalry between all the major parties during Ireland's revolutionary years. The author is Dr. Elaine Callanan. Elaine, you're very welcome back to the History Show.
Thank you very much.
Now, the period covered in the book is one of obviously great political upheaval. There are by-elections, local elections, and probably the most significant, the general election of 1918. It was a very different political scene than the one we're used to now. And in the book, you outline the four main political interests who were competing, who were participating. The Nationalists of Sinn Féin, the Home Rule Nationalists of the Irish Parliamentary Party, the Unionists and Labour, although obviously not Labour in 1918. Generally speaking, what would a campaign look like in those days? How different would it have been from today's campaigns?
Well, it was much more lively than today's campaigns, but it differed in a couple of different reasons. First of all, you could campaign right up until the person was walking into the polling booth. So, you know, you'd bunting and you'd banners and you'd leaflets and you'd people at the polling stations handing out those leaflets. So it was very lively. But in its liveliness as well, it could also be intimidating because, for example, if you were nationalist living in a unionist area and your polling station was bedecked in red, white and blue, you might be intimidated to go in and cast your vote. And similarly for unionist and nationalist dominated areas, that kind of intimidation might have put off people going to the polling station and casting their votes. But it was much more lively. And of course, you know, they relied heavily on things like posters and newspapers to get messages across. So the country was bedecked with poster campaigns and the posters were much more lively than they are today.
They were quite creative, but also, as I recall, the ones that I've seen, they contained a lot of information.
They did. Well, just in regard to creativity, I mean, they did lean on image a lot to get across messages. And of course, the one we're most familiar with in the 1918 general election is the Put Him In to Get Him Out, which depicts a man dressed in a prison uniform with the words Put Him In to Get Him Out and then maybe Vote De Valera or something. But I mean, to the people of the day, that was easily transcribed. It was really meant Put Him In Politics to Get Him Out of Jail. That kind of image was used quite regularly, and unlike today's elections where you see smiling faces and vote so-and-so in Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael or Sinn Féin or whatever it happens to be. I mean, all the political posters today look the very same. Back then they were competing, they were using different imagery, they were drawing on history, they were drawing on myths, they were drawing on, you know, colour in terms of flags and bunting. They were also you know, using a lot of words in some instances. But then bear in mind that people back then were standing in railway stations and bus stations waiting for periods of time. So they could actually pause and read material. Today we live in a much faster paced world.
Now, I suppose one of the other huge differences is that most of the elections during this period would have been conducted using a system very different to the one that we're familiar with in Irish elections today.
You're absolutely right, particularly the 1917 and 18 by-elections and the 1918 general election. They used the first-past-the-post system of voting, and that was literally where you went in and put an X by the candidate's name that you wanted to elect. Now, that changed in 1920 with the introduction of proportional representation. And of course, with the introduction of proportional representation, now you listed candidates in order of preference. And this means really that, you know, the emphasis on the candidate became more real in terms of the voting public. So you had to show who the candidate was and tell a little bit more about them. So you even see a change in 1920 and in 1921 elections where you see the use of candidates' names, their occupations, maybe even their address on some of the posters, where the political message is much reduced. And of course, that has evolved into today's style of showing the face, because now the face is on the ballot paper, plus the name and the political affiliation. So the difference in the voting system has affected the type of poster or propaganda method that has been used.
I suppose one of the major differences also would have been, for many of these elections, women would not have been able to vote. And then when they were able to vote, women under the age of 30 were not able to vote.
Yes, that's absolutely true. The 1918 Representation of the People Act brought in the capacity for women over the age of 30 to vote in the by-elections and the general elections. Now, they could, since 1898, vote in the local elections. But now, with the 1918 Act, they could not only vote, but they could also run as candidates in these elections. The impact was fairly strong in terms of, if you read the newspapers of the time, you certainly see a large turnout of women, a reporting on a large turnout of women at these elections. It is interesting that they picked the over 30, but the rationale or the reason for that, if you read through the House of Commons debates particularly, is that they did fear that if they gave women over 21 the vote, like men, that there'd be far too many women and women would take over the voting in the elections.
Now, you yourself, before studying history, I know, had a misspent youth in the field of public relations, and so you have a huge interest in marketing and advertising. Talk to us a bit about the modernisation of campaigning in this period in terms of adopting new advertising practices.
Yes, and it is very interesting that all of this happens at this time as well. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I spent a good few years working in advertising and public relations, primarily with Wilson Hartnell. But consumerism had hugely grown in this area, really from the late 1800s. You see the advent of the big department stores, and even in Dublin with the likes of Arnott's and Cleary's and department stores like that. And of course, they were beginning to advertise out to the general public to generate consumerism. And the other big change as well that was happening in this time was newspapers were also using image in their advertisements. Now, political parties didn't use the image in newspapers, but they certainly used the different font sizes that were now available. And, you know, the good political parties were aware of this growing consumerism and this idea of appealing to the public and using a call to action to get people to do something. For consumers, it was to buy a product, but for politics, it was to cast a vote in a particular way. So all of this influence was coming in to Ireland from places like the United States, but it was awakening in the political interest in Ireland as well. And we see this particularly in Sinn Féin at the time, because they produce an article in one of their publications, Larna Héireann, that actually encourages candidates, political candidates, to look to advertising methods in America, adopt them and apply them to suit Irish interests. So there's a growing awareness. And of course, now we're also seeing the likes of advertising agencies being established in Ireland. McConnell's opened in 1916 and Wilson Hartnell himself was around since 1879. So this idea of marketing, advertising, capturing the audience and then making them do something was a big phenomenon.
And what influence did the mass media propaganda of the Great War have on election advertising during this period? Because obviously in the case of the Great War, there was an attempt to sell a product there as well.
Yeah, this is where, if you like, the targeted advertising or public relations, as we call it today, propaganda, as they called it then, really moved from just aiming at particular consumers to aiming it at a mass audience. This was a moment in time where really whole nations had to be mobilised to support a cause, regardless of what side it was on. So what this really encouraged was kind of mass poster advertising, mass use of print media like newspapers. And then, of course, you know, in later years of the Great War, when they had film, they began to use film as well. Now, film wasn't used in political propaganda because it was silent back in the time. But certainly you see a very large increased use of posters, handbills, pamphlets. You also see, you know, quite extensive use of editorial in newspapers and advertising in newspapers. And all of this is borrowed from that kind of mass media of the Great War.
Now, we talked about those four large factions who were involved in the elections during this period in Ireland. How many of them specifically went out to try and get the female vote in that 1918 general election? Obviously, Labour, no, because they weren't involved, although they were involved in local elections. But certainly the other three parties who did compete in that 1918 general election.
Well, I have to give it to Unionists and Sinn Féin in that regard. They were particularly active in targeting women. Now, they targeted women in two ways, primarily. One was to actually encourage women to go out on polling day and cast their vote in favour of a particular party. But the other was to try and mobilise women to become actively involved in politics. Now, not as candidates, but as agents, going out door to door canvassing, distributing leaflets. So Unionists were very clever at doing that, so much so that they also encouraged women to hold meetings directed primarily at women and to have women speakers at those meetings where possible. Sinn Féin directed targeted propaganda to women and drew on kind of images like, you know, Dark Rosaline, Mother Erin, to kind of show women that they were part of this new Ireland going forward, this Gaelic Ireland going forward. Weak was the Irish Parliamentary Party. Now, they had already kind of set their stall back in the early Home Rule days when they had voiced kind of opposition to giving women the vote. And I think John Dillon, and I have to paraphrase here, but he referred to the fact that giving the women the vote was going to ruin Western civilization. Women remembered this in 1918. So, you know, there wasn't that much targeted voting by the Irish Parliamentary Party, except for Joe Devlin in Belfast. He was good at it. He addressed Irish men and Irish women, or ladies and gentlemen, in his advertisements to get votes there.
Now, political rallies were obviously an important way in those days for candidates to reach out to potential voters. And we've all seen the silent footage of Collins and De Valera giving speeches. They seem to be shouting at the top of their lungs. Obviously, they had no amplification in those days. How popular, how attractive were rallies to voters, back in the lead up, say, to the 1918 general election?
They were hugely popular. I mean, bear in mind that there was very little other entertainments to attract your attention. I mean, there was no television, there was no radio. So, you know, a popular politician or even the local politician coming to town to give a speech was a really important event, because local candidates even had other popular figures on the platforms with them. So people went out of their houses to participate in these big political rallies. Now, you're right that there was no amplification. So if there was a very, very large crowd at a political speech, the chances were, if you were midway or down the back, you weren't actually able to hear the speaker. But that was neither here nor there. You went for the atmosphere and the ambience of the event. And some also went for more subversive reasons. They might have gone to cause trouble. So, like, for example, if you were a Hibernian and you were attending a Sinn Féin rally, you weren't there to support Sinn Féin. You were there to disrupt the speech. And then others went along because they knew there was going to be disruption or violence at it. And that even in itself was entertainment. But the politicians, even though you're right, they were shouting, and, you know, people at the front perhaps could hear what they were saying. But what then became very important to those politicians was to get those speeches published in the local newspaper the next day so that people could read what was actually said at the speeches.
Now, when you read Bureau of Military History witness statements from this period, many of those who are giving these statements would have been involved in election campaigns, in by-election campaigns during this period. And there are lots of references to something that you were talking about there, to violence, one of the three V words in the title of your book. How serious was the violence? I know you're saying that, you know, some people went along for the entertainment of the violence, but it could go well beyond entertainment on occasions, couldn't it?
It absolutely could. Now, largely speaking, in the quieter counties, there was little or no violence, but there were certain counties where the violence was quite intense. Places like Waterford, for example, was very controversial during the by-elections and the general election. Then you also had John Dillon's hometown in County Mayo, Ballyhardine. That was also particularly violent. And areas of Ulster were particularly violent during those elections, particularly in Belfast. And in some of those, you had volunteers and Hibernians arriving on the scene of political meetings, bearing hurling sticks or revolvers with every intent of using them. You know, confrontation was sparked in order to instigate violence. Sometimes, however, that violence tapered off at the end of the day, and the competition was less violent and then reduced down more into ballad sing-offs on certain occasions between Hibernians and volunteers. But really, it depended on how controversial the candidates were in various different areas. And of course, Waterford was a Redmondite constituency. You know, there was very vested interest by the likes of the Ballybricken pig farmers in making sure that the Irish Parliamentary Party were elected in the city. And they wanted to get rid of the volunteers and Sinn Féin out of that area. So they were hell-tent on violence there.
We tend to assume that all the campaigns during this period were based on unionist versus nationalist, and within nationalism, the two, the constitutional nationalists and the militant nationalists. So that, you know, we think in terms of macro politics and ideology and all of this. To what extent did the more mundane things like tax, pensions, housing, all of that, those issues come into play in these elections?
Well, they came into play very significantly. I mean, even if we take the big 1918 general election, I mean, it starts off with the high ideologies of home rule, union, separatism. But it very soon changes over as we approach election date because a realisation dawns on the political parties that people are far more interested in who's going to pay the old age pension, what's the taxation system going to be like. And there was kind of even a war of, you know, taxation ideas, with unionists, you know, accusing the likes of Sinn Féin that if they come to power, everybody will be taxed to the hilt because they have no money to run the country. And then you have Sinn Féin accusing unionists and, you know, the British Empire of taking all the Irish taxpayers' money. And if they come to power, they'd be able to reduce everything because we won't be paying for an empire. So taxation becomes a very big feature as election day looms. And of course, as well as that, farming also becomes a very big feature in terms of land ownership, and which is the old agrarian conflicts kind of raise their heads a little bit as well. But really, it does boil down for the ordinary person into some of those key issues in much the same way as it does today.
Was there anything in those days even vaguely resembling opinion polling?
No, not so much opinion polling as we'd understand it today. But what you would see is newspapers kind of hazarding a guess at how their, particularly provincial newspapers, hazarding a guess at how the constituency might vote. Now, in the contested constituencies, there were 25 uncontested constituencies. But, you know, they might say that there's a strong Sinn Féin contingent here, or, you know, this is an Irish Parliamentary Party constituency, they'll walk this election. Now, they weren't always right in terms of their predictions, but that was the closest you'd really get to an opinion poll.
Now, finally, obviously, the war was over by December 1918, so conscription was off the agenda. But did it cast a pall? Was there the ghost of conscription? Was that element present in the campaigning in December 1918?
Yes, it was very much so. And of course, it was the blame game then at that stage. I mean, the Irish Parliamentary Party were blaming Sinn Féin, Sinn Féin's very existence, for causing partition, and Sinn Féin were counteracting that as well. And then equally, both sides were claiming success. In other words, the Irish Parliamentary Party were saying it was because they had had voice in the House of Commons and they were able to speak on behalf of Irish people that conscription had been avoided, even though, bear in mind, they did walk out of the House of Commons in 1918 when the Military Service Bill was extended to Ireland. Sinn Féin, on the other hand, maintained that it was their policies and their arguments that actually stopped conscription in Ireland as well. So that's really how it played out. And of course, partition and the whole idea of conscription is taken a little bit into the 1921 general election, which would be 100 years ago in June of 2021. Because partition is based on all of these kind of divides as well between the unionist nationalist and between even Sinn Féin and the Irish Parliamentary Party within nationalism.
Well, Elaine, it's an absolutely fascinating topic. Obviously, we've just scratched the surface of what you have covered in the book. The book is called Electioneering and Propaganda in Ireland, 1917 to 1921, Votes, Violence and Victory. And it's published by Four Courts Press. The author is Dr. Elaine Callanan. Elaine, many thanks indeed for joining us on The History Show this evening.
Thank you very much indeed.